This Saturday, October 19, marks 100 years since the founding of the Kinchala Boys Training Home, one of the darker sides of the stolen generation history of this country. On this occasion, survivors are calling for the place to be turned into a truth-telling and healing center so that the story of this infamous place is not erased. Joining us to reflect on this occasion is Uncle Roger, one of the remaining survivors. Uncle Roger, first of all, thanks for joining us and welcome to NITV Radio.
Welcome. No worries. Looking forward to it.
Now, this is a historical day, a day of reflection as well, and a day of action so that the story of this place, especially the stories of those who lived here and suffered under really atrocious conditions, is not lost with the last survivors. And there are not many living survivors of this infamous place.
Yeah, there's only 49 of us left. All the rest of it, originally it was 600 that came through this place from 1924 to 1970, and there's only 49 of us left. But we just want to get this place back at Kinchala. It seems weird, I suppose, to some people, but in this home, as a child, you bought here, and all your rights are taken away. Your culture, your everything just ripped off you as a child. The staff that was in here was ex-army, and so they'd just treat us like little white soldiers. We were told we were different. We weren't black, that we were white. If we went into Kempsey and played with the boys at Kempsey High School or seen an Aboriginal person walking down the street, we had to cross the road to the other side and get away from them. We weren't allowed to talk or mix with them at all. If they did find out we didn't, we'd get a flogging when we come back in Kinshaw. It's at home.
That's quite a horrible and very harsh way of living one's life. Do you recall the moment before you were brought into this, I'd say, hellhole? What was life like before you were brought in? And do you have any recollection of the time before you were brought in there?
Yeah, that is hell. On the 25th of June, 1958, a big black English car came up on the mission at Bowerville, and Sergeant Noonan from Bowerville Police Station got out one side, and Mr. Norton, was a welfare bloke, got out the other side. We were living in our Aboriginal housing on the mission. We were going to a Catholic school at Bowerville. We had a house, and we had a Dr. Bennett that looked after us. And they charged me with neglect. They come to the front door, sat my mother down, and mother used to go out and have a smoke, and they said, "Mrs. Jarrett, if you sign these papers, your kids will return within 12 months. Well, before that, Mum was 8 years old by the time the white fellas caught up to her, because Grandfather Sam Dodd-Eye hated the white people. So Mum heard when we come back within 12 months, she did sign the papers. And she did come down to Kinchala within that 12 months to get us out. Coming through the gate, spread a blanket out, and brought some cordial biscuits and lollies in, and we were sitting down inside the home. Me and my two brothers, Kerry and Philip, raced up. And so we're getting out of this bloody hell place. And within an hour, the manager, Frank White, came and said to me, "Mum, you have to go. So there's no way she was getting us back again." And I was told to my mother, I said, "Mum, please don't come back again," because the pain she had losing us once, let alone twice. What a beautiful, strong mother I had. And in this place was incredible. You come through the gates of Kinchala, and you lose your culture, you lose everything before you come through the gates, and you even lose your name. When I come in here, number 12, and number 12 is engraved into my brain. I can't get it out of my head. You know, if the other people had been tattooed with numbers on it, they'd put a tattoo over them, but we can't. Come into here, they took me to an incinerator, burnt my clothes, and I had second-hand sand shoes that the nuns at Bravo Convent gave me because I was born crippled at Crindy Beach on the north coast of New South Wales. And back by I was born crippled because we were fauna. We weren't allowed in hospitals. So they couldn't check my mother out. I got trapped up under her ribs. And my feet were turned together, born crippled. And I was very lucky that my father played football for Grafton football team. The white people, they got together and they sent me down at the age of four, mum and dad, and had an operation. I had steel braces and I still can't walk properly. In his own, the boys called me Pigeon, and that was my nickname. And at least I had a nickname instead of number 12. And every time I walked around, and them soldiers used to come up behind me and belt me on the back of the head, on the side of the head, and knock me down because I wasn't walking like a little white soldier. They'd sit down and have a meal, and they'd all have a talk and say, number 12, we've got to make him walk like a little white soldier. So then they'd all get on the bandwagon, and you'd be getting belted from left, right, and centre. And we never had any shoes in here after I burnt my sand shoes. They took me down to, they showed me airballed, took me down to a shower block, gave me a scrubbing brush and a cake of sand soap, not to scrub yourself with that. And you're cutting your skin and everything, scrubbing yourself. They gave you a towel to wipe yourself dry again. When you wipe yourself dry, you cover your eyes and your mouth over and they threw this white powder on you and you weren't allowed to wipe that white powder off. And I thought we must have had fleas and you couldn't wipe it off, it just itched. Anyway, they marched us round to a storeroom on the side of the home where they had square pigeonholes. In them pigeonholes had all had numbers on it. When I come into here, the bloke that was in here was number 12. His clothes were rags and they gave me his clothes. An 11-year-old skinny little black fella. And this man that went out, nearly 19-year-old, he was programmed in here and made to work for white people out in stops and stations as a labourer. Laid his clothes and I had to tie a string around his trousers to hold them up. And they were holes and ragged out. They never had a storeroom in Kinsler where they can give you clothes that fitted you. So they measured me up and 4 months later, I'd got clothes that fitted me. In this place were all ex-army. And I remember each and every one of those staff because they all bloody belted me as a child because I couldn't walk like a little white soldier. The manager's name in 1958 was Frank White. And they had a sergeant, Grenadier Guards, John Purvis. Had a big moustache in the toilet. And there was Harry Burns. He was a medic, white fellow from in the army. And there was Billy Dodds, which was a pretty good bloke. He was more sympathetic than the others. And the two cooks in here, Mr. Bilby, Mr. Stewart, ex-army, they lived in Jerseyville. And the maintenance bloke was Mr. Cooper. He's a local around Southwest Rocks. And Mr. Scott was the bloke that taught us how to milk cows, dig up paddocks, plant produce for white to sell. And with no shoes and your rags that you had on, in the wintertime, the grass is all full of frost. And you used to crack your feet all the way up to your trousers. Your skin would just crack. And when you got in the cold shower, it just burn. And because I couldn't wear shoes, I had to kick my toes. And I cannot today still grow toenails on my feet. And as you walk around through the grass, your toes get caught in the grass and they rip your feet. And the food in this place was substandard. They had galvanised garbage tins back in 1958 and the galvanised garbage tins weren't airtight. In one they had spaghetti and macaroni with a little black wheel that get in there and multiply by the millions, eating all the macaroni and spaghetti. When they cooked that up, it come with a little weevil and you have to eat that bowl of food until you clean the bottom of the plate out because they keep giving it to you until you ate it. In the breakfast cereals, We had porridge and wheat bix and a little moth and fly in there because we were airtight and lay millions of little grubs. But when them grubs were cooked up, they went stiff and they had little spikes on them. And when you ate the porridge and wheat bix, they'd be caught in your throat trying to swallow them down. So that was part of the food. And we never had any birthdays in this place, never even had any Christmases. And we had a dairy out the back. And as you went to high school, well, we had a primary school here with Mr. Telford. He was a teacher trying to teach us about sums and maths and everything else. But as a child being traumatized, you look at a blackboard and it's all scribbled. You cannot learn. By the time I was nearly 13, I went to high school and I went to 1H. Now, you go from A down to H, it's a long way down. And there's a fair few of us brothers there. We just could not learn.
Yet it is described and purported to be a training and education space, yet hardly any training or education.
The only thing they trained us as labourers to go out and work for white people who own farms and properties. That's all they trained us for. The rest, no schoolwork. You couldn't learn anyway because it's traumatising the head.
So it's
taught us how to milk cows. Yep.
Hence, the event will be marked by authorities tomorrow. There'll be representatives from the New South Wales government, and notably the anti-slavery commissioner will be there as well, which befits what you just described. It's more like a form of modern day slavery, not an education space.
That's exactly right. Well, we've got the the federal minister coming here tomorrow, and other dignitaries through the government that are coming here tomorrow. And we're pretty good on with the federal minister. You already spoke in Kinchla and Canberra about Kinchla. We're trying to get this place back because as a child, when you come in here, all your rights are taken away, even your heart and your love are buried in this place. You're flogged in submission. You couldn't talk. You couldn't do nothing. You know what I mean? So they just ruled like in a bloody iron fist as a child. With their support for being government, because we're having trouble with the local Dungally Land Council of getting this place back. We offered them a sum of money for it, but we had heard nothing back, and they want to amalgamate with us. But we want to turn this into an healing centre, a truth-telling place. It is World Heritage listed, the Kinchla Boys' home, and a lot of the boys have died now. We wish we had the healing centre at the back where they could have come in here and stay with the brothers. We are brothers, and when we get together, we are still the family that we knew as kids. You know what I mean? We look at our own biological family, brothers and sisters and that, and it's like looking at a stranger. It's hard to explain, but I can spell love, write love, but I wouldn't have a clue what bloody love is.
Yeah.
Even though I've been married 58 years to a non-Indigenous girl, a white girl, I come back to Barrow or Mission, and I was supposed to marry a girl named Elaine Walker, but by the time I got back from being taken to Kinchla, down to Sydney to work washing dishes and making toast, to back to the Barrow Mission, they said, "Nephew, your bloodline's too thin. Go away to Sydney and find a woman down there." So I've been married 58 years to a non-Indigenous girl, a white girl, a lovely girl. For put up with me, she must be something special because my head space wasn't the right space.
But you're really strong and resilient and despite a very tough and difficult start in life that was thrown at you, not something you chose, but something that was imposed on you, you managed to actually go and make a living in Sydney, yeah, despite very, very difficult beginnings imposed on you.
Well, in Sydney, I worked at a PMG hostel where they got white kids down to make them linesmen and technicians. They get 10 quid a week. And then eventually the brother-in-law worked at Simon's Carpets at Lidcombe, and they were doing a stop take with it. I'll sort ends of carpet out and measure them. And by that time, I was a father at the age of 17. I come out, I had no parental guidance. I didn't know how to be an husband. I didn't know how to be a father. It was all taken away. Anyway, he said, do I want to get spare money? So I went and done some work with him at Simon's Carpets at Lidcombe. And I must have did a good job because Les Simons was the owner. He offered me a job there for £19 a week. And I was only getting 10. And I said, yes, I've got to buy nappies, I've got to buy formulas, I've got to buy cots, I've got to buy my kids' clothes. So I took the job. And I started there sweeping floors and, you know, doing cutting carpets and underfelt and making ready for the carpet layers. On the weekend, I did single rooms, which I got all the knee kickers and all the stuff I needed to do the job. Now I am a resilient floor layer. I can go out and I can weigh commercial vinyl in hospitals. I've got a bus driver's license to drive our bus, and I can do parquetry, carpet, vinyl, a lot. And we're getting this place back, Kinchala, to turn it into that place. We can teach the young kids that come out of jail. When they come out of jail, they've got a record. They cannot get a job in the white society because they've got a criminal record. We're going to approach the government and get under our care and teach them how to do these things. I've got one idea I want to do, because the river's up here. When we're here, a ship used to come up here and go all the way up to Kempsey, a ship from out the ocean. Now you can't even get a little dinghy up there. It's that wide and that silted up. I only get a flat bottom punt to put out in the river, have a hydraulic grabber and a camera going down and clean the rivers out, clean all the debris out, take it back, put it on a bank, recycle the metals back, and then get a dredge in, GPS a couple of kilometres of the river, pump all the soil out, make it deeper, and then what we dredge out, put it on the bank. Within a month, hopefully, the salt will leach out of the mud and we can spread that back on the banks and get rocks and build the river smaller but deeper. And also, that's the young ones that come out of jail, white, black, doesn't matter. You know, and we'll take them under our wing and do it. But we've got to get this place back and we can teach them trades. Also, what we want to do is clean this country up. It's like a garbage tip. There's lantana, which a woman brought over from Holland as a pot plant. Even the goats won't eat that lantana. And within that jail system, when they come out and they got a record, they can come and start cutting lantana. They pull it out, burn it, and put Australia back to a beautiful country, which it was. We have the qualifications to do all that. All we need is to get this place back. And we can start it, but we're having trouble with the Land Council. And as I said, hopefully with the ministers and all that coming down here, they may be able to persuade, you know what I mean, for us to get it back. And because if you get a positive wage on the Friday, the father can buy his kids shoes, bikes, anything. At the moment, the little black fellow will go out and see the white fellow with the nice shoes on, and he steals. And he sees the bike and he steals the bike because the father's got no job. He's on the dole. Now, if he gets a regular wage on a Friday, he can buy them for his kids and it'll change the old meaning of being segregated, being poor as Aboriginal people.
Are you in contact with the other uncles, the other survivors, and how are they?
They're all, the brothers are up here now. They started to come in, yes, definitely. And when we get together, we cover each other because we are brothers. It's a hard thing to say. It's like if you got a family and you go to your family, and you know their biological family, you got that love there. Well, we got love for each other because we were brought up as brothers in this home. And to see our biological family, there's no love there. They're just like strangers. It's a funny thing to say, but this is true as I'm sitting here. And all the brothers are coming up now for their son's anniversary.
Now, before I let you go, anything you'd like to add, maybe a message you'd like to send to the community out there? Because this is a very important day, and hopefully things will go your way and the place will be really turned into a truth-telling center as is requested, and a place of healing, just the way you described it. But any other information you'd like to share with us?
I'd like us all to become one family. We are all from this earth. Every molecule of your body, your concrete, metal, steel, what, we come from the earth, the mother. Now, from the mother earth, we all come. I would like to get the English law, which was made back in the 1400s, to protect the rich people, get that law and give it back to Charlie, the king that they called king. Giving that law back, and us get together as a family because we live off this earth. We are human beings to become one family, and we can make our own law, which will all be equal. And we've got people at the moment sleeping in streets and cars, and we have to fix that. And the only way we can fix it is us Indigenous people doing this and showing the white people how it can be done. And we can do it. We've been here. We are the oldest continual living human beings on this earth. This is the oldest continent on the earth. So we've survived for millions of years, or whatever it is anyway. So we can lead the way. We just need that help to get the land back and to start these things in process. I'm 77, and I'd like to see that I've achieved in my life by coming back here, owning this place and teaching our people and any other one that want to come and learn trades to clean up this country, that'd be more than welcome. I want to thank you for letting me have a say on behalf of the brothers. Thank you.
Uncle Roger, thank you very much for taking the time to talk to us about this milestone, the call to have the Kinchala Boys Home turned into a truth-telling and a healing center. It's been really a great pleasure talking to you.
Thank you very much.